Airy Productions Unlimited presents Undocumented Features, Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword, Audio Edition. We begin with the introduction to the series proper, which was originally posted at the same time as the first installment. I created Caitlin, the eldest daughter of my UF avatar and his longtime lover Kay Morgan, in 1993, and by 1994 had developed a pretty solid understanding of her personality and characteristics as a child and young adult. I liked her immediately. In ways, she's an atypical Airy hero, and in others, she fits the mold so well. The combination of factors makes her fascinating and fun to work with. Yet, for whatever reason, I never managed to come up with a story that would showcase her. Until now. Welcome to the Symphony of the Sword. This is, in part, a story of Kate's coming of age, her transition from girl to woman, with all that brings along with it. It's also the story of her friends and loved ones, the people who surround her and enrich her life, her brothers and sister, her friends at school. It doesn't have a rigidly Kate-centric format. Some episodes don't feature Kate at all, in fact. But in some way, every movement of the symphony is about something affecting her life and work. I hope you enjoy it as much as I've enjoyed creating it. Valete Griffin, Marlborough, Massachusetts, June 3rd, 2001. Funny how the series evolving has made some of that really a bit silly now. But I preserve it for posterity. Onward! Here we have the introduction to the first part of the symphony, Symphony Number 1, Das Lied von der Erde, The Song of the Earth. A new generation of heroes is slowly coming into its own in the years following the War of Corporate Occupation and the Twilight Incident. Gentle Caitlin Hutchins, eldest daughter of Griffin and Kay, is a student and musician who doesn't see herself as hero material. She just wants to get an education and develop the tools to make ever more beautiful music. She's about to learn, though, that with a background like hers, even if she doesn't look for trouble, it may just find her. I have a message from another time. Airy Productions Unlimited presents Undocumented Features, Future Imperfect, Symphony of the Sword. First movement, Wounded Rose, by Benjamin D. Hutchins. That's me. Thursday, August 26th, 2404. Worcester Preparatory Institute, Worcester, Massachusetts, Earth. Caitlin Hutchins finished putting away the last of her books, flattened the last of her boxes, and put them out in the hall, and then stood with her back to the door and surveyed the room with the satisfaction of a job well done. Room 412 was a standard one, and nothing very fancy. It had incredibly boring, industrial brown, everything-resistant carpet, and its cinder-block walls were painted with a rather rubbery white paint, specially formulated to resist the attempts of generations of students to hang posters on it. Two sets of bulky, utilitarian wooden furniture took up most of the space. Desks, chairs, bookshelves, chests of drawers, and large, freestanding wardrobes to make up for the room's lack of a closet, all in pairs except for a mysteriously present third desk. The beds at least could be bunked, and had been, in one corner of the room. Kate had pushed the rest of the furniture back against the walls, opening up as much of an area in the middle of the room as possible. There was just enough clear floor space for her to put down the blue Persian rug, her favorite, that she'd brought from home. It was a bit silly that there were two of everything, given that Kate had managed to snag one of the much-coveted single-room assignments. She'd been uncommonly lucky to do so, she knew. Room 401 at the end of the hall, which was supposed to be one of the fourth floor's two single rooms, was being renovated. The residential life department had only reluctantly agreed to let her take one of the regular rooms by herself rather than refunding her parents the extra cost of her single reservation, but after last year they owed her. And they knew it. So here she was, and now she was hoping she'd at least be able to get rid of that third desk. She went to the window and looked down at the quadrangle, watching with a quiet smile as fellow students went here and there on their errands across the grassy expanse with its three center-crossing, brick-paved pathways. Having a room that faced the quad could get noisy from time to time, but that would be preferable to the odd-numbered rooms on this floor, whose windows looked out on the football field. Being on the fourth floor was a nice change from last year, too. 201 had a shorter climb, but the view wasn't as good. As she stood idly watching the quad, a splash of bright color caught her eye, and she made a little surprised noise and focused on it. It was a student, a boy from the cut of his clothes, with the most outrageously pink hair Kate had ever seen. Surely an odd color for a boy to have chosen, but who was Caitlin to judge people's affectations? At any rate, it was a most eye-catching shade, and being something of an aesthete, Kate smiled to see it bobbing across the quad, startling against the green, brown, and brick red. A moment later, Kate noticed that this student, whoever he was accompanied by no less a personage than Miss Claudia Montaigne, the Dean of Student Life, and carrying a suitcase, too. That was interesting. A late arrival? Kate wondered who he was. Oh well, nothing to do with her. She picked up a book of blank sheet music from her desk, climbed up into the top bunk, and started jotting a short composition that had been rattling around in her head for some time, humming bits of it softly to herself as she scribbled. A minute or so later, there came a knock at the door. Kate wondered who it could be. She didn't get many visitors, especially at the beginning of term, when everyone was busy getting their class schedules compiled, books acquired, and rooms arranged. She put down the notebook, climbed down, and answered the door. "Oh, Miss Montaigne, hello," she said, surprised. Stepping back slightly, she said, "Come in, won't you?" Miss Montaigne smiled but didn't enter. She was a 30th, short, slightly stout woman with a bun of strawberry blonde hair and a sympathetic smile, and right now she looked a little harried as she said, "Good morning, Caitlin. I can't come in, I'm afraid. Too many things to do today. But I need to ask you to do me a big, big favor." "Oh?" Kate cocked her head inquisitively. Miss Montaigne looked embarrassed. "Look, I know you were supposed to have a single room this year, and everything was all arranged, and after last year I really don't have any right to ask this," she said with a slight wince, "but I'm really in a spot. We've got a new student who arrived this morning under somewhat special circumstances, and she needs a place. There's nowhere else we can put her without tripling up one of the Sanford Riley doubles, and, well..." The administrator sighed, lowered her voice a bit, and continued, "She's really been through the wars, poor girl, and I think what she needs more than anything right now is someone quiet who can give her space. I know how much you value your own, so, well, can I impose? Ironic, I know. She's really a very nice girl. You know I wouldn't ask after, well, last year, if I didn't think you'd be able to get along with her." Kate considered. She did know that. Miss Montaigne was a very understanding woman, and she knew all about Kate's preference for peace and quiet. She really wouldn't have broached this subject if she weren't desperate, and her final comment was telling. "All right," she said. Relief flooded the face of the Dean of Student Life. "You'll try it? Oh, thank you. Really, I'm in your debt. I'll arrange for the fees to be refunded. Well..." She arranged herself, smoothing at her tightly held hair, and sighed, shrugging into a brisker, more professional demeanor like an old coat. She took a half step back and said, "It seems everything's settled. Come and meet your new roommate, dear." Footsteps came from the hall, and then another figure stepped around the edge of the doorway. Kate blinked. It was the suitcase-bearing boy, the new student she'd seen on the quad. Except the new student most definitely was not a boy, and could only have been mistaken for one in very poor light, or at a sufficient distance, say 200 feet. No, though wearing what looked like a black uniform jacket cut for a boy, this was definitely a girl, and a very pretty one, too, holding herself well despite the heavy suitcase she carried. She was a few inches taller than Kate's 5'2", and athletic, with a rather pointed face, alabaster skin, and wide, striking royal blue eyes. Her bright, lustrous pink hair was cropped into a sort of disheveled Audrey Hepburn gamin, slightly shaggy, as though it had already started growing back. Kate wondered why she'd had it cut, certainly if her own hair were that color, for it seemed natural. Even the girl's eyebrows and the faint regrowing fuzz at the nape of her slender neck matched it. And texture, she'd revel in it. Kate's own hair was an unremarkable brown, a shade or two lighter than her chocolate eyes, and she'd never suffered it to be cut. It hung loose about her shoulders and down her back with just the faintest hint of natural curl in it. She knew without really considering it that, wherever she and her new roommate went, this girl would be the one drawing all the attention. She was everything Kate felt she herself wasn't. Tall, graceful, gorgeous, with an air of easy confidence in her movements even in this awkward situation. In her tidily tailored, wasp-waisted, man-style jacket, tight scarlet shorts showing an uncanny span of leg, and red-laced black-and-white saddle shoes, this girl would command the attention of every thinking creature with an even vaguely human aesthetic sense within eyeshot, and pale, plainly dressed, mousy Kate would vanish into obscurity next to her. The thought didn't upset Kate. She didn't particularly like the spotlight anyway, and had always felt vaguely grateful that she'd not received that sort of beauty. Her mother had it, of a very different type from this girl's, but of a similar distinction and impact. Kay Morgan also had the brashness of temperament that had to accompany such beauty to make it bearable. Kate felt she lacked both and was glad of it. "Caitlin Hutchins," said Miss Montaigne, gesturing, "meet Utena Tenjo." Kate bowed. "I'm very pleased, she said. "I'm very sorry to impose," said Utena with downcast eyes. Kate smiled. "It's all right," she said. "Come far?" "Not really," said Utena, wondering why this girl was so nervous. "Well, I'll leave you two to get settled in," said Miss Montaigne. "I'll look in on you in a little while and make sure you're getting along all right." "I'm sure we'll be fine, Miss Montaigne," said Kate cheerily. Once the door was closed on the administrator's retreating back, Utena braced herself for the dissolution of her new roommate's pleasant demeanor, but it didn't come. Kate only turned around to see her standing in the middle of the room, feeling awkward. She smiled again, a warm and welcoming smile, and gestured with an open hand to the unmade bottom bunk.
Thank you.
Said Utena. She went to the bed, put her suitcase on it, opened it, and then turned around with an unasked question on her face. Seeing it, Kate nodded as though realizing that she'd forgotten something, went to her desk and took a notepad from the top drawer. With the tip of her tongue wedged into the corner of her mouth, she wrote for several seconds, then tore the top sheet off and handed it to Utena. Puzzled, Utena looked at the paper. Written on it in a neat, upright hand were the words, "Please don't be offended if I don't speak to you much these first few days. I have a speech impediment which becomes especially bad when I'm dealing with people I don't know well. I wrote this note because if I tried to say all this right now, it would take me half an hour. I'm not nervous, I just talk that way. It's nothing you did or said, and there's nothing you can do to help, so please don't worry about it. As we get accustomed to each other, I'll start talking more. In the meantime, welcome to Morgan 412, and please don't feel you're intruding. If I need to, I can find my own privacy in the middle of a crowd. Caitlin." Utena looked up from the paper to her new roommate, who stood smiling pleasantly, waiting. For several seconds she was silent, and then her own face broke into a matching grin. "Okay, fair enough," she said. "I really am sorry about barging in like this, though."
"Quit apologizing," said Kate mock crossly, "or you'll make me mad."
Utena raised her hands in surrender. "Sorry."
"Don't!"
"Just for that," Kate said, pointing to the window, "you can try to get the window open." Utena obediently went to open the window, which was a challenge since it had been painted shut by several successive generations of plant services employees. Eventually, after trying it from this angle and that for several minutes, she braced herself against the univent,
wedged her fingers firmly in the gap, and gave a mighty heave. With a tremendous crack, the window opened. An inch. Panting, Utina paused for a moment, then heaved again, and with an ear-shattering creak, it opened another inch. She paused, looking at it dubiously, and said, "I don't think I should open this any further." Kate came up behind her to inspect it, causing Utina to flinch sideways and give her a sidelong look. "What?" asked Kate. "Nothing," Utina said. "I thought you were going to forget it." "Okay," said Kate, and went back to examining the window. Well, she thought to herself, Miss Montaigne did say she's been through the wars. I guess she literally does need space. Glad I didn't try to shake her hand. Caitlin sized up the window frame, looking up and down both sides. Then she tapped experimentally at a couple of places on the frame, carefully gripped the lower sash with both hands, tilted her left wrist slightly, and pushed. The window glided smoothly up the rest of the way. "Ta-ta-ta-ta-da!" said Kate with a flourishing gesture. Utina gave a brave attempt at a smile, but something in the last few seconds had veiled her face in a shadow that muted it. She seemed to realize it was futile after a moment, and silently went about unpacking. Shrugging inwardly, Kate climbed up into her bunk and resumed her composition. Nothing more was said in Morgan 412 for several hours, as Kate composed her song and Utina unpacked her few belongings, then lay on her bed and felt gloomy. The school was pretty. The people had been nice so far, and Caitlin seemed pleasant enough. She was a bit odd, but oddness appealed to Utina, so that wasn't likely to be a problem. So that only left everything else about her life. She sighed, turned on her side, and tried to go to sleep. Above, Kate wondered what could happen to a person to make her sigh like that at 15. She'd heard her father sigh like that, but he was over 400, and had seen more sorrow and felt more pain in his life than anyone should have. Then she shrugged. It wasn't her place to pry into things like that. If Utina wanted to tell her, she would. If she didn't, well, that was her choice. At 6, Kate jumped down from her bed, put on her shoes, and turned to Utina's motionless back. "Are you sleeping?" she asked softly. "Not really," Utina replied. "Why?" "Dinner time," Kate said. "If you dare." Utina rolled over, sat up, and looked at her. "Is it that bad?" "Judge for yourself," said Kate with a smile. She took her black wooden walking stick from its place next to the door, and off they went. "You're right," said Utina, looking down with distaste at something that was supposed to be Seleucian sham. "This is barely edible. Why don't the dorms have kitchens?" "School couldn't soak our parents for the meal plan then," Kate replied. "Oh," said Utina, and the shadow passed over her face again. "Of course," she added in a quieter tone, and she resumed pecking at the flat noodles and unidentified meat. Realizing that she'd stepped in it with her mention of parents, Kate scowled at herself and looked for an angle to take by way of recovery. She was saved from that trouble, however, by the arrival of another student at their table. Seeing his shadow fall across her plate, Utina looked up, and up, and up a bit more, her eyes widening. Standing behind and a bit to the left of Kate was a giant, over 7 feet tall and almost impossibly broad, with skin the color of unleavened coffee, bright green eyes, a large and misshapen nose, and no hair. "Hey, Kate," he boomed in a voice that matched him, deep and rich and resonant, with a touch of an accent that tasted of islands. "Budge up a little, will you? Didn't think you were coming back till Monday." Kate smiled and moved over. "Hello, Moose," she said. "I wasn't going to, but there was nothing much going on at home, so..." She shrugged. Utina noticed how much milder Kate's stutter became when speaking to this fellow student. She still tripped over letters, but mostly just at the beginnings of words, and she didn't have to stop and start over. So it was true, she did find it easier to speak to people she knew. That was good. Moose grinned and plunked down a tray loaded with more of the alleged sham than Utina thought any humanoid could ever consider consuming, then lowered himself carefully to the bench.
"I hear you," he said. "I was so bored back home I could hardly get out of bed." "Well, that and the gravity," he added.
Noticing Utina, he went on, "Hello, you're new, aren't you? Surely I'd remember if I'd seen your face before."
"Utina," said Kate, indicating the new arrival.
"Moose."
Moose's eyebrows, which were so bushy they gave the impression that they felt a need to make up for the baldness of his scalp, rose. Then he rose after them, unfolding to his full impressive height again in order to bow and boom,
"The Honorable J. Maurice MacEachern the Fourth, at your service, my fair lady."
Bleak though her mood might be, Utina had to smile at that. She rose as well, bowed in return, and said, "Utina Tenjo."
"Utina is my new roommate," Kate informed Moose as the two both sat.
"Roommate?" Moose said wonderingly. "Thought you had another single this year."
"So did I," Kate replied, but things change."
Utina opened her mouth, but Kate pointed her fork at her and added,
But if she apologizes for imposing one more time, I'm going to throw her out."
Utina actually laughed at that, raising her hands again in mock surrender. A moment later, someone else appeared at their table. This was another young man, much shorter and slimmer, with a short brush of blonde hair standing up from the top of his head and thin, dark brows over intense blue eyes. He was already grinning when he arrived and plopped his tray down unceremoniously next to Utina's.
"Hello, all,"
he said in a voice that was rather reedy, if strong enough to suit his needs.
"First meeting of the IBGF for this term already in session."
"We don't have a quorum yet," Kate pointed out.
"I guess that's true," he observed, looking around. "I wonder where Azalin and Amanda got to."
"Well, I don't know where Amanda got to," said a slim, dark girl as she stepped up to the end of the table. "But Azalin was informing the cook that sham noodles are not supposed to be fried in used crankcase oil."
Azalin, Kate gasped. You cut your hair.
The dusky girl put down her tray and twirled around, which evinced little reaction from her shoulder-length thatch of more or less straight, wiry gray hair, and grinned broadly, her remarkable gold eyes twinkling. "Actually, Mama did it," she said. "She said it was unseemly for a girl going on 16 to still have her pouchling stripes." Utina was looking puzzled, so the girl turned to her and said, "I'm Dantrovian." When that didn't clear things up any, she added, "We're a marsupial species. We're born with striped hair, but it grows out solid-colored, once we're unpouched."
"Ah," said Utina, feeling vaguely more enlightened.
"I don't think I've met you, by the way," the girl went on, sticking out a three-fingered hand. "I'm Azalin Devir Natashkin."
"Utina Tencho," said Utina for the second time as she shook the hand. "Are you new?"
Utina nodded.
"You're very pretty," Azalin declared matter-of-factly. "I love your hair. You should let it grow out. I hope you come to this year's Festival of the Falling Leaves," she added with a sunny grin. "We can have a lot of fun."
Utina reddened a little.
Thank you," she murmured, wondering what the Festival of the Falling Leaves was and what sort of fun it entailed.
"Are you in the band?"
Azalin went on.
Utina shook her head.
"I'm Caitlin's roommate," she explained.
"Oh! Kate the Cave Dweller took another roommate?"
Azalin turned to her friend, hands on hips, and scowled. "I thought I was going to be your roommate if you ever decided to risk it again."
"Circumstances overtook you," Kate replied with a smile.
Sorry.
"Well, that's okay," said Azalin, brightening again. She turned to Utina. "Maybe next term we can get a quad. We could take one of the Ellsworth apartments and each have our own room, and have a living room to study in, and have our own kitchen and not have to eat this slop," she added, jabbing her fork vindictively into the central mass of her sham.
Nobody moves into an Ellsworth in the middle of the school year, Asimuffin, observed Moose placidly.
First time for everything, Moose Cake, Aslan replied. The blonde boy made a retching sound.
Moose Cake? I say, that's not supposed to be an endearment, Aslan. Sounds like something you'd regret stepping in while walking in the woods, what?
You just say that because your soul lacks romance, Devlin, said Moose with a beatific grin that did entertaining things to his charmingly ugly face. I think it's perfectly sweet.
I think I have to agree with the Earthman, said a fourth arrival, this one a middle-height, athletic-looking girl with flowing coal-black hair, pale blue skin, and faintly glowing red eyes. As your endearments go, Azalin, I rate it below Megamoose, but I do have to admit it certainly outscores Moose
Amanda! Moose boomed,
effortlessly smothering her calm contralto and causing people as far as five tables away to flinch visibly as he surged to his feet and swept wide his great black arms in an exaggerated gesture of welcome.
How simply delightful to see you again! And how was your summer? Suitably warlike, I hope?
It was a little disappointing, Amanda replied. The Voldrani didn't put up much of a fight. My wing didn't embarrass the homeworld, but that kind of war isn't much for building a reputation. She shrugged. Maybe the Quadrinar will be a challenge. I just hope they wait until I'm home for the Christmas holidays. Exchanging small talk among themselves, the four newcomers arranged themselves at the table. Then Moose cleared his throat, tapped the side of his water glass with his spoon, and said with exaggerated formality,
Now that we're all here, as Vice President of the Student Band Association and the Institute Band Geeks Federation, I call this meeting of the SBA officers and the IBGF, inasmuch as those two organizations have exactly the same membership, to order. Entendez-vous, s'il vous plaît, our illustrious and duly elected president, the beautiful and talented Miss Caitlin Hutchins.
Kate reddened just a touch.
Thank you, Moose.
First, we will address old business from last term, said Moose grandly. Item. Devlin still owes me 23 credits for his ticket to Hyperzone.
The blonde boy dug into a pocket and handed across a wad of bills.
There you go, old sock, he said cheerfully. Frightfully kind of you to spot me, eh, what?
I believe we may classify this item as concluded, said Moose with a satisfied grin as he tucked the money away.
Item. Amanda still has Azalin's copy of The Forbidden Love Poetry of Sirakov Vulcan.
I'm still reading it, said Amanda. I didn't have a lot of time over the summer, what with the war and all.
I don't need it back right away, Azalin replied. Go ahead and finish.
Shall we say tabled for that one, then? Asked Moose.
Kate nodded, smiling.
Very well. Item, I was going to get a new axe over the summer.
His grin broadened as he went on.
And I got it, and it is bitchin' unto the supreme degree. You will all get the chance to admire it and envy me at our first rehearsal.
There was a round of applause.
Item, electronic dissemination of this year's room locations, Moose went on. Before leaving for the dining hall, I checked the IBGF webpage, and it seems all of us are registered.
He swept his bright green eyes around the table before settling on the blue-skinned girl.
Except Amanda.
You giant buffoon, Amanda replied, annoyed. I'm rooming with Azalin, you know that.
But how could I? Asked Moose piously. You never updated the page.
Amanda sighed.
Very well, Moose, you win. I'll do it when I get back.
Moose smiled a faintly but falsely patronizing smile.
I'll leave this item pending, then. And finally, item, he turned to Kate and smiled a sly smile. Mademoiselle President, the package has arrived.
Kate smiled.
Thank you, Moose. I'll start setting up for it right away.
Moose saluted.
We, your loyal vassals, stand ready the moment its place is prepared, he informed her. Now then, I believe that concludes our old business. We will now begin with new business. Item,
Mademoiselle President has acquired a lovely and charming roommate, and we must all welcome her to the Big W with an appropriate display of our all-encompassing affection for our fellow beings. He indicated Utina with a sweep of one huge hand. Those of you who have not, introduce yourselves, please, to Miss Utina Tenjo. The blonde boy turned, seemed to notice for the first time that he was sitting right next to someone he hadn't met, and declared, "Tally, how the fox is sighted! By George, I must be going blind. Carter Devlin, my dear lady, or Devlin Carter, take your pick, it don't matter. Think I'm related to some old earth royalty, but I'm too frightfully lazy to find out for certain. Anyway, I'm simply delighted to meet you, Miss Tenjo. Simply delighted. Hope you'll have some use for me in the future. I'm not very smart, but my memory's good." Utina, who had been smiling pretty much continuously at this group's byplay since they convened, said she was pleased to meet him. The blue-skinned girl elbowed past Devlin and smiled a bit coolly. "I am Flight Leader Amanda Electra Dessler, Commander of Ice Wing Flight, 12th Gamelon Space Battle Wing, on His Majesty the Emperor's glorious flagship, Destiny's Fist." Utina blinked. "You're a military officer?" she asked. Amanda nodded. "I am a decorated starfighter pilot, with a command of 20, and 16 1/2 enemy kills to my credit," she said proudly, "as well as 3 enemy warriors killed in single combat." Utina looked impressed, but a little puzzled as well. "Then what are you doing here?" she asked. Amanda smiled. "One does not learn all the things one will need to be Empress of the Gamelons in battle," she replied. "Oh, Amanda, stop trying to impress the girl," said Devlin dismissively. "All that rot about killing in single combat. She's going to get the impression we're all a bunch of bloodthirsty duelists, eh, what? Whereas nothing could be further from the truth. Why, I myself am a coward of the first and finest order. I shrink from the thought of danger or pain. I flee from confrontation. I hide from..." "You'll hide from my fist if you keep prattling, Earthman," said Amanda darkly as she returned to her seat. "Yours is a degenerate branch of the species." "Well, there's no need to be nasty," Devlin said, hurt. "Whose alphabetical knowledge of all the spaceline timetables in the solar system got you home in time for your flippin' war last summer?" "You were rewarded for that service already," said Amanda testily, spearing a chunk of the mysterious meat on her plate. "Isn't love beautiful?" Ezelin asked Utina. Utina smiled, with only a flicker of that already familiar shadow visible to Kate in her eyes. Ezelin missed it completely. "Yeah," Utina replied. "It sure is."